You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia in association with Rafa. From grand tours to group rides, the Champs-Élysées to coffee stops, Rafa exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport. Today we are in Rovereto.
Cozze cittene, cozze piscine, non spigudeci cora, non spigudeci cora. Cozze cittene, cozze piscine, non spigudeci cora, se non mangiano le femmine.
We issued some time penalties because after we reviewed the images from the helicopter and from the television, as well as the reports of the motors, we had several incidents of prolonged drafting, and so we made our best decisions based on the speed that we had and based on the distance that was recorded on the television, as well as the normal penalties based on the observations of the commissaires. We had some that were significant, others that were not so significant, and some we want to enforce the fact that we are watching, the television is watching, and the media is watching, and the public is watching. So we had 203 and 208 had 2 minutes for prolonged. Number 201, 20 seconds. Number 91, 30 seconds. 198 and 133, also 30 seconds. I think it's the rider's choice. It's not that people are making mistakes. It's the rider's choice to follow who they follow. We had people trying to follow vehicles. We had people trying to follow each other, catching teammates, passing riders, and continuing to stay in the slipstream of those riders. It's a rider's decision. We obviously see more now that we have the video technology. We also take into consideration that the rest of the world sees it, and it's important for us to take a disciplined approach for the riders.
Who was that, Daniel?
That was Randy Schaefer.
Who's Randy Schaefer?
He's the chief commissaire on the race. Well, he's the president of the jury on the race. And about an hour after the finish today, there was a commotion in the press room. We were in a sports hall, not too far from the finish line. It's a bit of commotion.
Exciting when that happens, isn't it?
It is. Mara Venue disappeared inside one of the changing rooms in the sports hall, looking very well, wearing an ominous expression, and he murmured something about there being possible sanctions for riders drafting in the time trial today. And we were told that the president of the jury, Randy Schaefer, was going to make a statement. And he did. He emerged into a scrum, into a melee of microphones, and he duly announced that six riders had been sanctioned for drafting, illegal drafting today.
Including three from Team UAE.
Not a good look, is it?
Fabio Aru, Diego Ulisi, and Valerio Conti.
And Rich, I'm reliably informed that, Tony Martin in particular, I think when Fabio Aru came in and Tony Martin saw Fabio Aru's
time.
There
is a gif. There is a gif.
Oh, there is.
There is an eye roll gif.
Yeah, he was not too enamoured.
The nature of Aru's, the advantage that he may have got in the time trial is not clear. He's been docked how many seconds? 20 seconds? That's not a lot. It was still a pretty, it was an eye-raising ride. Eye-raising? Eyebrow-raising? Ride. Not eye-raising. Eyebrow-raising.
Eye-popping, maybe.
Eyebrow-raising ride from him. He's not been riding well. He suddenly pulls out the bag in the time trial. It did look a bit dodge. But anyway, he ended up 8th on the stage as a result of that. Shall I?
You should do the tale of the tapper. It's a highly unconventional, unconventional start to this podcast. With napalm, we go through all sorts of protocols and and checks before we start recording. You like to buffalo straight in. And you know, both approaches have their advantages.
Okay, so the day dawned bright but overcast in Trento.
Overcast?
Yeah, bright, but it was bright, but it was also overcast. It was one of those bright days, but there was a lot
How
of cloud.
How can that not be a tautology?
Because there was a lot of cloud cover, but there was also clearly a strong sun up above there.
Okay.
But that's kind of immaterial. What we had today was a time trial, which is difficult to tell a story about a time trial in
it's
the way that
they
have.
It's a very whimsical tale of the tap already.
Okay, so the time trial was 34.2 kilometres. It started in Trento and finished in Rovereto, where we are now. It was a pretty straightforward, non-technical time trial, or so Tom Dumoulin had told us. I was surprised watching the footage how technical it was. In fact, Tom Dumoulin almost came a cropper at one point, but he was a bit disappointed with it. He felt there wasn't much of an opportunity for him to take time on Simon Yates. And so it kind of proved. It was a day certainly for time trial specialists. Alex Dowsett rode well, Jos van Emden rode well, who won the final time trial into Milan last year at the Giro, let's not forget. Tony Martin was the long-time leader until Rohan Dennis came in and nudged him out of the hot seat, and he won the time trial.
But what happened on GC, Ritz? That was what we were all excited about.
I'm getting to that.
Yates versus Dumoulin.
Okay.
Tom
Dumoulin was third on the time trial at 22 seconds. Simon Yates finished 20th. He said in the press conference that was his best ever long time trial in a Grand Tour. He's been good in the shorter ones. He was 137 down on Dennis, and therefore 110 down to Tom Dumoulin. So all the predictions about him losing 2 minutes, I said 45 seconds. 110 was not completely unexpected, but I think we had Yates on a very good day and Dumoulin on not his best day.
Well, Rich, there was a sense this morning in Trento. We went down to Trento and...
Haven't finished yet.
Oh, sorry.
the big surprise was probably Aru, but as we later discovered, there might have been a bit of jiggery pokery going on. The big losers were Thibaut Pinot and, to a lesser extent, Domenico Pozzovivo. Pozzovivo's still third, but just now 39 seconds ahead of Chris Froome, who was a pretty solid fifth in the time trial. And he was second of the GC riders to Dumoulin, really. Pinot was 66, 3 minutes 19 down. Richard Carapaz also had a pretty bad day. He was 52nd, 257, and he slipped down to 9th overall. Yates, as I said, was 20th, and a pretty solid ride by him. So the GC standings now, going into the final stages of the Giro, are Simon Yates leads the race. Tom Dumoulin is at 56 seconds. And then there's quite a big gap to the other guys. Pozzovivo at 3.11. Chris Froome at 3.50. Thibaut Pinot down to 5th at 4.19. But Rohan Dennis up to 6th overall, which is pretty good. I mean, still a long way to go for him. But his big ambition here was the two-time trials and a top 10 overall. And he's looking good for that.
Well, Rich, certainly speaking to a couple of the guys at BMC this morning, Matt Chandri and Marco Pinotti, who always parachutes in. He's the time trial expert at BMC. They were kind of already of the mind that Rohan Dennis's Giro has been a success, certainly to the extent that his GC ambitions can be pursued in future. Whatever happens now, I think he's lasted almost 2.5 weeks in the higher echelons of the general classification, and it's proven that he was justified. They've been vindicated in backing him as a GC rider, I think.
Time trials are always funny days, aren't they? There's a sort of low level of activity all day, and then this big finale, and it was all about Dumoulin and Yates, the final two riders to finish today. Dumoulin came across the line, and there was an almighty scrum around him. He was held there for a bit. He wasn't allowed back to his bus until they knew for sure he wouldn't be taking the pink jersey. So he had to wait until Simon Yates finished. They then let him go. They released him like a fish into the sea, and off he swam down to his bus. Now, you followed him, Daniel. And
I think without further ado, we should hear from him and from Mark Reef, the coach of Sunweb, and Tom Dumoulin.
I was hoping for more, of course. I did a solid TT, but definitely not one of my best. And I think Yates had a really good day again. He's just in absolute wonderful shape, so then there's nothing to do about it for me. So I started the TT like I always do, quite conservative. And one TT, you can really speed up towards the end, and one TT, it's not a day for that. And was the latter. I was only getting worse until the end. Right now, Yates is just too strong for me. I'm not giving up, of course not, no.
Tom, when you see this time trial and the one in Israel, do you have the impression that you're at more and more of a disadvantage, that the Grand Tour organisers need to give the time trialists a little bit more slack?
Well, it's over the years, it's becoming more and more difficult to make a real difference in the mountains. And in comparison, relatively easy to make a big difference in the TTs. So I can completely understand that it's not going to be a grand tour for me every year. Last year I had the luck of having a lot of time trial kilometers, and this year I haven't. That's it.
Mark, we already sensed a bit of a sort of deflation from this morning, talking to people around the team when you saw the conditions, and you maybe realised from this morning that it was going to be very hard to take a lot of time out of Yates.
Yeah, that's true. Yesterday during the recon, it was already clear that we were hoping for, normally on the profiles you see that it's flat, but then still during the time trial that it's still a little bit wavy and a little bit going up and down, and that's also where we hoped for here. But after the recon of yesterday, we saw that it was a really flat course. That's only a few moments that you really can make a difference. Yeah, and then we also thought, okay, it's not going to happen that you close the whole gap of 2:11. But from that moment on, I was hoping personally to close it within the minute, and that also happened today. So I'm actually standing here with a happy feeling.
And yet there were some climbers who really did suffer. Pino, for example. Why did he go so badly and Yates still managed to limit the losses? Just his form is that good, is it?
Yeah, I think so. I think that with Yates, that he's just keeping the line that he also had the last days. Eh? And I think that he's also having wings, if I translate it directly from Dutch. He's just having a really good shape. He's having already 3 victories. He's in pink. It's a big gap, and I think that just that line he's continuing, and that's also why we said yesterday already, with the shape that Yates is having now at the moment, that he is on every field and climbs on explosive hills. He's in every field. He's better than he was before, and he's also keeping that line now in the time trial. And that's also why we said already up front that it would be difficult to close that gap of 2:11. But in the end, I think that we can be happy with the result that we're having.
Given the similarity of Prato Nevoso to Europa last year, how important is that stage now? Is that the last shot, really?
I don't know. It depends a bit on how it will evolve also with Yates. It's going to be in the end of the third week. We are still hoping on a bad moment of him, and that can also happen in stage 19 or 20. That's also that are tricky stages. And one bad moment, we have to be there with Tom. So it's not. I would not say that stage 18 to Prato Nevoso is the last chance.
Well, Rich, we got the sense, I think even yesterday in Tom Dumoulin's press conference, that Sunweb had pitched up here yesterday, or they'd made the journey the previous night, but they'd gone to look at the course yesterday and they'd been disappointed. They'd realised that it was going to be harder than they expected to take the time they needed off Simon Yates. You know, there'd been a lot of talk of 2 minutes. Some people even thought it would be more, it might be 3 minutes that Dumoulin could take off Simon Yates. And when they came here yesterday and they looked at the forecast, they realised that it was a very fast course, and the difference between a fast moving climber and a fast moving rouleur was not going to be as big as they expected.
It was interesting hearing Dumoulin explain that yesterday, because you know, he explained also it was a slight tailwind today. There wasn't much wind, but the slight tailwind also meant that it was just difficult for him in those conditions. He said it was easy even for a rider like Simon Yates, not a specialist and quite a small rider, to ride at 50 kilometres an hour or thereabouts. And there's only so much that Dumoulin can do. He can't go at, you know, superhuman speeds. So the harder it was, the easier it was for him to gain a bit of time. He'd have liked some climbs. A headwind also would have been to his advantage. It was quite interesting to hear that. But he was quite downbeat, and the result was probably more or less in line with what he expected. I don't think that was Dumoulin nearly at his best.
No, but you look at the general classification now, 56 seconds. We also, certainly in the middle of last week and before the weekend, had kind of taken for granted that Dumoulin was going to get very, very close to the pink jersey and would possibly be in the pink jersey tonight. He's a minute off it. And that makes the outlook quite bleak for the next few days. However, three big mountain stages to go. I keep banging on about it, but this stage to Prato Nevoso, the next mountain stage, it's perfect for Tom Dumoulin. It's a 40-minute time trial in effect, and he needs to start gaining time there. That said, as Mark Reef said in our interview, you know that there are such big climbs on those last two mountain stages and such long descents as well that all sorts of things can happen. And you've also got the gravel road on the Colle delle Finestre. You know, riders can end up stranded there with no team car to you know, give them a wheel or whatever. So you know, it's still open. And you know, I spoke to Chris Froome. We'll hear from Chris Froome later. He still thinks it's wide open even for someone like him. We saw 2 years ago Vincenzo Nibali, after 16 stages or 3 or 4 days from the finish, he was 4 minutes 43 behind Steven Kreuzweig. I don't know why I started to pronounce that in German. Anyway, and Nibali overturned that, didn't he? And yeah, and the stages that we've got to come are at least as hard as the stages that were to come at that point in that Giro.
What we're going to see, as Simon Yates told us in the press conference, is he's going to ride in a different way. He's going to become a defensive rider. He doesn't need to ride now in the aggressive way he's ridden so far. It's interesting to look at his lead and consider the time bonuses that he's gathered along the way. I think about 45 seconds in time bonuses. So without the time bonuses, he would be 11 seconds ahead of Dumoulin. And on paper, at least, it would look obviously far closer than it is. It's still pretty close, and I think still a lot to play for.
Yeah, I think the best judges of form are the riders themselves. They know exactly how form works. They know how that experience of form that most riders used to have of sort of 6 weeks on sort of floating on this form cloud, that's possibly no longer quite the same. But due to the training that guys do, it's you know, probably maybe lasts a different amount of time now. But I think the riders themselves understand it, and it's just interesting listening to Dumoulin talk about Simon Yates's form and almost being in awe of it and almost being resigned to the fact that it's not going to fall off a cliff, and consequently it's going to be very, very difficult for him to recoup the time he needs. What can make it fall off a cliff is illness, a crash, which, you know, sort of sends someone's body out of sync. Something really untoward happening. But if Simon Yates stays upright and doesn't get ill, then it's difficult to see a way back for Tom Dumoulin. We're in Trento, counting down to the start of this, well, we think it's going to be a pretty decisive time trial today at the Giro. Having some conversations with members of team staff somewhere, but I think are a bit underwhelmed by the course in terms of how much difference that Tom Dumoulin is going to be able to eke out today. The one way in which they might get a competitive advantage, or several teams might get a competitive advantage here today, is by using something called VeloViewer. Now, I happen to have bumped into the founder, the brains behind VeloViewer, Ben Lowe. Ben, what is VeloViewer and how are teams using it here at the Giro?
Well, VeloViewer started off as just a website for the general public to use, so people like yourself and Richard and Lionel to try and inspire them to go out riding more. And that's how it all started, and there's lots of data visualizations within there. The key ones was this 3D profiles of climbs, and various teams started using that a while ago, a few years ago, and I found out about that and then ended up working with Team Sky to come up with a package that was more dedicated to what a team would need. The key thing is that they have reliable barometric elevation data for key climbs and for time trials courses, so they know exactly where, what gradients the climbs are, so they can work out what gear ratios they need to have, and then they can work out what their pacing strategies are for the climbs or for time trials.
As I understand it, you're able to plot it. Well, the teams are able to see in real time the course, the direct support teams in the team car are able to see the course that their riders are riding. And in advance of the stage, in advance of races, they are able to annotate in very detailed fashion. So today, for example, you showed me the route that the riders are going to be tackling, and literally down to every roundabout, every turn, every piece of road furniture, a lot of the teams using VeloViewer have annotated all of that. And the riders also have access to that information as they go, and it's spooling on their computer units.
That's right, yeah. So I have an app that sits in the car, and it's showing that same corrected elevation data to gradients, so they can see exactly what's coming up for the next 2K or 5K.
Or even more detailed than that, even 50 metres, am I right?
Oh, yes, for sure. So they can zoom in, they can choose what level they zoom into. So they'll know when the corners are coming up and when the roundabouts, and as you say, they can set up as many way markers as they want along the route to say where the sharp corners are, which side of the roundabouts to go. On normal mountain stages, things like that, they'll say where the beadons will be handed out. And they can export that as a TCX file, so that's a file that can go on to various head units for the riders, and they can choose which of those waymarkers will come up, so the riders will know that they've got 5 kilometres to go to the start of the next climb, so they might need to get in position to get up to the front. And then it'll tell them what the average gradient is for the climb, and they'll know how far it is to get to the top. So all of that's available for the riders as well, if their head units can support it. But in the car as well, the direct sportees will have all those waymarkers listed down the side, and they, it automatically counts down based on the car's position. It counts down the distance to each of those, and it provides them the information to say over the radio to the riders to say that there's a 2 kilometres to go for a climb that's 6 kilometres long at 7%, and they can just read that straight out without having to refer to notes in a book or anything like that.
And just finally, Ben, how many teams are using your app here?
So I've got 4 teams signed up here using it. So I've got Team Sky, Mitchelton Scott, BMC and FDJ. But there are lots of other teams that are just trying it out here at the Giro. So I have 17 in total. So there's another 13 teams trialing it out. But I also have got Mitchelton Scott women's team are using it over at Beira at the moment. It's really handy for those guys because the road books are usually far, far worse. So they really enjoy having the reliable information for their races.
A San Francisco.
A community around the world. Stories and films with the most compelling characters. The world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
Thank you to Rafa for being our main sponsor and allowing us to be here at the Giro d'Italia. We have a competition winner to announce. We ran a Twitter competition, and among the people who tweeted the episode with a nice comment were Dale Coulter. Congratulations, Dale. You have won a Rafa Pro Team lightweight gilet and a Science and Sport 4-hour fuel pack. Please send us an email, contact@thecyclingpodcast.com, and we will send you your prize. We also heard there, Daniel, from somebody that you chatted to this morning.
We did.
Don't look surprised.
Well, technology was the theme
came
of the,
to the fore today.
It was
didn't
the
it?
Theme of the day. We had the VAR, the video assisted referee. Is that what the acronym stands
I think
for?
So.
Yeah, video assisted referee.
It's a video referee who sits at the finish line studying all the broadcast footage.
In a little
footage.
White pod, a little white truck, and we think he or she has access to pretty much everything that's recorded on a race. Obviously, not everything that is recorded is aired, but we think the VAR czar.
Gotta find the VAR czar. That'd be a kilometre zero at the Tour de France.
I would. We think they have access to pretty much everything. But we heard there from Ben Lowe from VeloViewer, and I was fascinated by this. Well, he showed me the app in action this morning, and what it effectively does and enables teams to do and direct support teams to do is read an auto cue, which is perfectly synced with the course, and they have all their notes. They can have all their notes prepared, and literally every 10, 50, 100 metres, however they've set it up, they can simply read off what they're going to tell the rider on a time trial. And we talked, well, we made a kilometre zero, didn't we, about the Garibaldi earlier in the Giro, and how important that had been, how important it still is for certain slightly more old-fashioned direct sportives. But the new breed, it's really redundant. And it's made redundant by things like Ben's app.
Fascinating. What other things did you pick up at the finish there? You spoke to Chris Froome.
I did, Rich. Shall we just hear from Chris Froome?
Chris, was that more like the Zonkalan Froome than the Sepada Froome?
I'd like to think so. I mean, obviously after a rest day, I felt a bit better, a bit more recovered. After the Zonkalan, I was nailed.
Were you surprised by that? I mean, given the form you seemed to be in the day before?
Not really. I mean, I think I put absolutely everything on the road out on the Zonkerland. I mean, that was a stage I'd really been targeting before the race even began. I mean, I was maybe caught off guard a little bit. It was a split, obviously, on the second last descent, and I didn't have the legs to close it, and the guys in front saw the split, and they just went for it. So that was also part of part of the reasoning.
Bit of an unfamiliar position for you now. How do you attack these next few days? What do you hope to get out of it?
Let's see. I mean, tomorrow should be a straightforward day on paper, but this is the Giro, so who knows what could happen. And then we've got three really big mountain days back-to-back, and those are generally in the Giro d'Italia where we've seen some pretty big upsets, if there are going to be any. So I think it's still to race for, I think, at that moment. I mean, Simon's been untouchable until now, so it'll be interesting to see how he pulls up after this time trial and how he is this last block. But at the moment, I can't see anyone taking that jersey off his shoulders.
Nibali won from about 5 minutes down 2 years ago.
He did, and I think everyone's thinking about that and quietly hoping they can have a similar experience. But I think we've got to be realistic as well. I mean, it's a big ask at this point.
Interesting there to hear Rich that he hasn't given up. Well, we didn't think he'd give up, but he's not talking about stage wins. He's not talking about a sort of last 3 or 4 days a la Contador. There is that precedent, which a few riders have mentioned in this year already, of Nibali turning things around in 2016. And there is terrain for that to happen. I think Froome is possibly, I mean, a couple of people have noticed that his saddle over the last few weeks, that I think he had a couple of issues with that and with maybe saddle sores in the Tour of the Alps, and I don't know if they're ongoing issues, but he looked a little uncomfortable today.
Yeah, I think he's certainly not quite himself, but that was a battling performance today, I think, and it was, you know, noticeable that he was second of the GC riders in the race behind Dumoulin, which I think he'll take some comfort from. Decent, you know, a solid sort of performance there. I said a while ago at an event that we did, actually, that I didn't think Froome would ride the Tour de France. I actually think he will now. My thinking on that has changed.
Do you think Egan Bernal's going to ride the Tour de France?
Well, it was reported in Marca, the Spanish paper, that Bernal would ride the Tour de France.
Giro's been beating this drum for a few days now.
We spoke, didn't we, Daniel, at the finish, to Dave Brailsford, just as we were passing. I asked him about this rumour. He said that they have withdrawn him from the provisional squad for the Dauphiné, coming out the Criterium du Dauphiné, and people have inferred from that he will be going to the Tour. He said that they have withdrawn him to keep their options open. Now, I had chatted to Rod Ellingworth, Team Sky coach, at the start this morning, and I asked him whether Bernal would ride the Vuelta. This was before I'd seen the Marca report. And Rod sort of raised his eyebrows and said he would ride, he could see him riding one Grand Tour. He'll certainly ride a Grand Tour this year, he said. Now, I thought he was being a little bit mischievous, because this rumour has been floating around that he might ride the Tour. I think they might chuck him into the Tour de France. He's 21 years old, very young, but, you know, maybe not 21-year-olds, but we've mentioned already, Laurent Fignon won the Tour at 22. Jan Ulrich was, you know, 20.
Well, he was 22 when he finished second. But the obvious question, Rich, would be, what is he going to the Tour de France to do if Froome is there? However, I think his youth and his inexperience ensures them against the situation which might have developed last year with Mikel Landa, where Mikel Landa is a guy in the prime of his career, and he was sort of riding, fighting for a contract, and possibly thought that he could have won the Tour de France. And I think there were moments last year where it was quite difficult for Sky to reaffirm the hierarchy in the team. With Bernal, a 21-year-old, I think he'll be in awe of Chris Froome, he'll be in awe of the whole situation, and I think it's very unlikely that you would see any acts of insubordination. And so it would almost be the best of both worlds, in the sense that they've got a great domestique, and should something go wrong with Chris Froome, then they could potentially have a guy who's ready to step up as the deputy leader. I mean, I'm not sure what Geraint Thomas would think about it. He's almost being primed
for that understudy leader role, isn't he? That's been my understanding.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Independent research shows 10% of sports nutrition products would get a professional rider banned. Trust Science in Sport, the world's highest standard of banned substance testing.
Thank you to Science and Sport for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast. We'll hear another listener's question at some point this week to the Science and Sport experts. You can get 25% off Science and Sport products at scienceandsport.com with the code SISCP25. SISCP25. And we're grateful to Science and Sport because their sponsorship, along with Rafa's, does enable us to cover all three Grand Tours. That's how we're here at the Giro. And we got a bit distracted there by the Tour de France and Team Sky in the last part, Daniel, but we are at the Giro, and today was all about, well, Rohan Dennis, really, as well as Simon Yates. And I spoke to Matt Chandri as he was racing along the finishing straight to meet up with Rohan Dennis at the finish. Here's what he had to say.
Well, that makes up, does it, for Jerusalem for Rohan, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, sums it up, and, you know, it did go down, that Jerusalem time trial prologue, you know, so we showed what we want to do. We took that jersey and we held on to it for a few days, and now we're, you know, this was another big step. After Tirreno we came to see this TT, so we targeted it as we did the first one, obviously, but you know, Dumoulin is Dumoulin, so now we get this one, and then we'll look forward to the next few days, and we'll try and do our best. But we're in good position.
And Rohan, I mean, he's got other aims here as well. He seems to be riding strongly.
He's strong. He's confident. He's calm. He's focused. He's working with the team, teammates. We lost two guys, unfortunately, the other day. But you know, we're not here to win the Giro. We're here to do really good, and that's what we're doing right now.
So Max Chandri there, as he said, they're not here to win the Giro. But in terms of what they are here to do, they've had Rohan Dennis in the pink jersey. He's won a time trial and he's riding pretty solidly in the top 10 and may well finish in the top 10. Any other results catch your eye today, Daniel? One that did for me was Chad Haga, the American rider who was seventh in the time trial. He's a good time trialist, but I was quite surprised to see a rider from Team Sunweb ride quite so hard when, you know, often in these situations, I know the Michelin Scott riders were all told, all under instructions, to take it pretty easy today.
Well, on that subject, Rich, you'll also notice that David de la Cruz and Vasil Kirienko were pretty high up.
Team Sky had three today, in the top 10 there, yeah.
I think we can infer from that that they were told that they could ride with the handbrake off today. Ben O'Connor, I think, was pretty impressive again to finish 24th on the stage, and this is the young Australian Dimension Data rider who's impressed us a lot. We've heard from a couple of times. He now on general classification, Rich, if I can
he's
find
up to 12th. He's up to 12th. Yeah,
which is a remarkable result in his first Grand Tour, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he was in the ballpark with Simon Yates today in terms of that time trial time, and he's been up there in the mountains and in a team that is really struggling at this race, and generally I would say he is a bit of a beacon. And he did an interview with Lionel Burney in the podcast a couple of days ago, and he sounded like a very interesting guy. I've not spoken to him before, but yeah, riding really, really well.
I mean, the biggest surprises for me, Rich, were some of the poor performances or some of the guys who didn't quite live up to our expectations. Thibaut Pinot's time trial is a bit of a mystery.
Well, I was going to ask you, what's happened there?
Well, he said today that he didn't feel that he had any strength in his legs, but the downturn in his fortunes in time trials is almost as remarkable as the upturn in 2016 when he won time trials. He was the French national time trial champion.
The whole
champion.
Team, they won the time trial Tirreno Adriatico, did they not?
Yeah, and they were, you know, there was a lot of fanfare about the bikes that they were using, the Lapierre bikes that were supposedly very, very fast. And, to my knowledge, there hasn't been any let up in the amount that they've worked on time trialing, or, you know, they've got a very good sort of backroom staff there, people like Fred Grapp, Seb Jolly, and Julien Pinot. And, you know, they're still dedicating plenty of time to time trialing, but it's just not happening for Pinot, which is puzzling. And it must be very frustrating for him because, he had become a real all-rounder who, even on these Grand Tour courses, which are more and more weighted towards climbing, he looked like he was someone who could be competitive on any Grand Tour course. And today's performance raises the question of whether that's still the case.
I mean, it's worth you asking Julien Pinot about
this. I will.
Because he has become stronger in the climbs, but has that come at the cost of his time trial? He's down to fifth overall now, and it's difficult now to see him going on the podium, although he had a good last few days at the Giro last year and won a stage, of course.
Yeah, I mean, he's a diesel, and he's a guy with a big engine, and physiologically very impressive, and that kind of rider tends to be in the small minority who can improve in a Grand Tour.
Well, I mentioned that the tendency for the teams of riders who are trying to win the race to give their riders a, inverted commas, rest day. I spoke to Jack Haig at the finish. He is one of Simon Yates' key men, really. He's been a very, very valuable teammate to him. He's also his roommate over the first 2 weeks. And here he is at the finish of the time trial today.
Your job is a big one this week. How do you ride a time trial like that?
That's an interesting one. I did this like an easy time trial for the first time in Vuelta, my first year I did it, and I was actually incredibly nervous the whole time, like trying to do the calculations in my head of time cut and everything. But basically I just go out there and I do a moderate intensity effort, so like a zone 3 effort in training or something like this, and I know having done that you'll make time cut no problems, and you also get just a bit of a sweat up and tension on the legs again after the rest day, and you go into the next day feeling okay.
And how are you feeling going into the third week of the race? Because we've seen an awful lot of you all race. Are you, yeah? How's the team going to manage itself this week? You've got Mikel Nievi and Roman Kreuziger there as well. Are we going to see as much of you on the climbs as we've seen already?
I hope so. I'm a little bit nervous, actually. I might have screwed up and set the precedent too high at the beginning of the tour, and it's really hard to live up to. But hopefully the same for the first 2 weeks. I'm super happy with the way that I'm riding. And if I can ride as good or even better than the first couple of weeks, then I'll be super happy with my performance. And obviously, my help will go a long way to helping Simon hopefully win the Giro.
So that was Jack Haig, the challenges of riding a time trial and not exerting yourself too much while also not, you know, being eliminated, which would be a bit of a disaster. And I spoke to Roman Kreuziger at the finish as well for a kilometer zero that's coming out tomorrow on Simon Yates. And they've got a big week now. As Simon Yates said in his press conference, he's going to ride the rest of the race in a very different way. And that's when the team, which has been strong already, will really become very important. Kreuziger, Jack Haig, but Mikel Nievi, you know, who's still kind of highly placed overall. He's been riding consistently. But I think they're expecting a lot from him in this third week. You spoke to Esteban Chavez yesterday as well,
oh,
Daniel.
Oh, I did.
Do you forget about that?
I did. Maybe we should hear that right now.
I think it will be crucial last 3 days. Actually, last 4 days. The day after the time trial is not easy one. It's tricky. And always happens something in the Giro. This is the beautiful of this race. And if we can work like we work in that last week will be awesome, and hopefully we can help the team for win the race.
Are you shocked by Simon and how well he's going, how strong Simon is?
No. I think it's no surprise for anyone, you know. Sometimes the people want to fish in some stories or to find some stories, but if you see the result of this guy, it's unbelievable. He finished 6 at the Vuelta, 7 at the Tour de France, and this season he going really well since the beginning in Paris-Nice. He's really close to one, and Catalonia, how he won, and yeah, for me it's no surprise. Him and Adam had a really, really big talent, and now they can show the talent after all the process when he passed to professional, and yeah, I'm no surprise for them. The guy, I think everyone knew that since the beginning, since they are under 23.
And I know you're always philosophical about everything. You always, you know, say the sun always shines the next day and you smile. But it must have been hard for you mentally the last two or three days. Well, last 4 or 5 days, no?
Yeah, never is easy this sport, especially when you're in really good performance and you go back to the general classification, but nothing we can do. I can do the maximum I can. Suffering how is suffering every time in this sport. This sport sometimes, or maybe mostly of the times, is really cruel. We know that. So yeah, it's hard, but the life continues. It doesn't stop. So if I'm angry or I try to find one answer immediately or something, it's stupid. I just need continue, be calm, and be smart like always. Enjoy, and always see the glass half full.
And on that day when it went wrong, were you worried from the morning, or was it just only when the stage started and the climb started, or did you already feel that something was maybe not quite right?
From the morning we knew something is not right, and we're crossing fingers when the stage started different, but no.
I saw you on the trainer that morning and you looked very focused and very worried.
Yeah, we try to escape about what will happen, but nothing worked. And yeah, nothing we can do. Sometimes the human body is like this. Hopefully it's one reason we will try to find. Will be no easy. And for sure when we find, everyone will forget what happened, which is normal. Because that story will be old, that will be another one, you know, will be the Tour de France or another story. So it's just about us, and like always, it's yourself, your work, your team, your family. And this team is like my family. They support me when I am my highest, but also they support me when I'm my lowest. Like, they sign my contract when I can't ride my bike, so for sure they will support me like they do now.
So Chavez, Daniel, the enigma that is becoming Chavez, or...
Yeah, well, we talked in the press conference yesterday about...
In our press conference
about what Mitchelson Scott might do with Chavez going forward, and whether they might reshuffle their pack, and whether Jack Haig could take his place as an auxiliary Grand Tour leader. I understand Chavez has another year on his contract, so that's not going to happen until the end of 2019 at the earliest.
What about food then? Since Lionel's not here, we need to talk about food. We went out and we had a bit of salty risotto last night. It was a restaurant that was recommended by our hotel. It was a lovely hotel up in the vineyards overlooking. The point on that, actually, and someone made the point on Twitter, this was not a wine trial, and yet it rode the course pretty much, took the riders through wall-to-wall vineyards.
We had...
Very strange.
Yeah, Marzemino and... Teroldego, isn't it? The red wine from Lagrine, on both sides, didn't we? Hopefully we'll go back to it and enjoy a bit more of that Tremina that we tried yesterday.
We're singing Trento again tonight.
And Richard, I shall be eating some polenta because we're in the north of Italy. You know that the southerners, so as you know, there's a bit of I wouldn't call it a rivalry. There's severe division in Italy on lots of different levels between the south and the north, so much so that there's a political party, or that has been for the last 20 years or so, that's wanting to separate the north from the south of Italy. And in terms of slang and language, they each have fairly derogatory terms about each other, and the southerners, one of the words they use for the northerners is the polentoni, which literally means the big polentas. So
Bergamo,
someone from the north,
is the capital of polenta, isn't it?
It is a particular type of polenta. We're not going to get... Remember, we got into a big debate last year about what was polenta, whether it was a sweet dish or a savoury dish.
I don't remember that. I
think that was me and Lionel. Anyway, hopefully polenta tonight.
It was an odd place last night, wasn't it? It was a strange... I mean, it was recommended by this very nice place we were staying, but the waiters were all dressed as if they were working in DIY shops,
yeah,
or something. You know, they had Castorama style dungarees on, and everything about it was a bit odd, and the food was, I would say, slightly disappointing.
We ate another another regional speciality, which I forget the name of now, but it was kind of small savory donuts with a lot of cured ham on top, wasn't it?
That was all right, but the risotto was a little bit disappointing. Yeah. It was okay, but...
We'll look out for a couple of the other regional specialities tonight. The strozza preti, which literally means the strangle priests. And that's a form of pasta that's often eaten in this part of Italy. I think in this part of Italy they call it the strangola preti. Different name, but same meaning.
Let's go.
Let's go and get some downers.
There's a kilometre zero coming
tomorrow. Get some down our gullet.
Coming tomorrow morning. That is about Simon Yates. And it's lots of people speaking about Simon Yates. A couple of good stories from Matt White in there. And
Matt White stopped saying look. Have you noticed
that? No, he said look. The first word he said to me in this interview was look.
I think he's making a real effort not to say it anymore.
Do you think?
We mercilessly ribbed him.
Oh, dear.
Over several months.
Oh, God. No, he definitely. He opened tonight with look. But we also hear from Simon Yates' first coach, Francis Newstead, who looked after him when he was 14 and 15 on the British talent squad. Really interesting. I spoke to her on the phone the other day. Fascinating to get that insight. So that's coming from Zero tomorrow for Friends of the Podcast at thecyclingpodcast.com. That's all for us from tonight. We'll resume tomorrow night. Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you, Rich.
A community around the world. Stories and films with the most compelling characters. The world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa.